Blog Talk Radio.
Because this is the October 28th, which is the birthday of one of the most corrupt judges ever to sit on the bench in California. This guy, Kevin Vincent Ryan, who was born in Alberta, Canada, about 55 years ago. But on his marriage certificate, which you will see, the certified copy which we have on the web, he admits that he was born in Alberta, Canada, but on his judicial application, he committed perjury, claiming he lived all his life in San Francisco, which is perjury. He's infamous because of the case of Stephen Nery, a U.S. Navy sailor, 18 years old, who was stalked, drugged, lured, raped, and railroaded here in San Francisco nearly 20 years ago. And he spent nearly 16 years as a guest of the California penal system in a case where San Francisco, this guy, Kevin Ryan, had no jurisdiction, no permission from the U.S. Navy to remove this youth from the USS Carl Vinson, nor to prosecute him. And for 3.5 years, this 18-year-old was denied medical care for the broken hand he acquired or sustained in fighting off the AIDS-infected rape of Juan Pifre, who was connected to the prosecutor in this case, another corrupter, Terrence Hallinan, who hates the military, whose own grandfather was involved in the assassination of a British official in Dublin, Ireland, and fled to San Francisco. Unfortunately, the British didn't demand that he be extradited back to Ireland to face trial for his role in the assassination. There are a lot of threads in this case, and Jack Cashel got part of it in his book, What's the Matter with California? We've had people who have been involved in the U.S. military and in military intelligence, U.S. Army, such as Joe Golden. We had people at Accuracy in Media. We've had people in corporate media who are honest, such as Ron Fortner, who unfortunately died of cancer, U.S. Air Force veteran, who was also involved in exposing the Sen Q assassinations in Oakland, California, and Los Angeles. A USS Ranger radio broadcaster who was U.S. Navy sailor also. He did work on this case. We had the famous family of Dr. Philip Dreisbach, family from Pennsylvania, U.S. Air Force veteran, who spent many months and over $100,000 to investigate and to try to defend U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Neary. And, of course, a lot of this was covered up by the morons in the media. This case was started in April of 1996 by Nick Rommel, who was gay in his private life. He was a city official, and he called me in April 1996. I was recovering from an explosion of coffee pot, of all things. And he said, they're talking about in the bars how they're going to railroad this kid and put the U.S. Navy on trial as homophobic. And I said, they wouldn't dare. And he says, you watch, they're going to do it. And unfortunately, he was correct. He was right. He was a whistleblower on other cases of corruption here in San Francisco. His lover, Scott, or his partner, they were very nice people and working in honest, ethical nonprofit organizations. His partner, Scotty, was brutally murdered by another Canadian. It's very interesting, these connections, these foreign connections. Nick was a whistleblower, and he was told to shut up. And there was a brutal stabbing of Scotty, his partner. And, of course, the guy was Canadian, and I believe he was extradited, or he was tried in San Francisco, legally tried. This was a legal trial. And I think he was exchanged to spend the rest of his time in a Canadian prison. We don't know his whereabouts right now. Media people were allowed to come in to examine so-called evidence. This guy, Johnny Brannon, who has fled to Hawaii, we'll get into him. I investigated the case for the U.S. Navy because I knew Juan P. Frey from 1969 for his involvement in the San Francisco police case of Detective Brodnick, who was brutally murdered by people associated with Juan P. Frey. P. Frey came here as an exchange student from Argentina back in the early mid-60s, I think. 67, 68, went to San Francisco State. He got involved illegally in American politics because he wasn't and never became an American citizen. He was going to be deported, and he concocted a bogus marriage with a lesbian who operated out of a storage locker. We'll put more of that up. And, of course, he was a friend of the corrupt prosecutor in this case, so Terrence Hallinan, who funded him illegally with HUD poverty funds, which were never accounted for. And this case goes all over the place, believe it. It's incredible. Stars and Stripes wrote about this case. A descendant of a great writer, she did some video on this case and interviewed on film Artie Funer, who's a U.S. Marine veteran of World War II. He worked on the case. He's unfortunately dead. A lot of people have died because they were old. A U.S. Army lawyer, World War II, Raul Almason, he started the case, the habeas corpus, but he died a year later of kidney failure. He was a descendant of Benito Juarez, the first mestizo president of Mexico and family. He grew up in the Philippines because the family had fled from Mexico to the Philippines. Just as an aside, when Spain was the big colonial power here in the Western Hemisphere, Mexico City was the administrative capital for the colonies in South America and in the Philippines. And so if there was a problem in the Philippines, it had to go through Mexico City, and then it went to Madrid in Spain. And that's how things were. That's why you see a lot of Spanish names in the Philippines. Among the other horrible things that happened in this case is just incredible. Lesbian terrorists, they came into the courtroom, and I was sitting there with another lawyer, and they used these orange stickers. They were wearing them saying, stop bashing immigrants and homophobia and all of this, and they openly lobbied Ryan's jurors. Now, I got Ryan's jurist from another judge when they realized that they had no jurisdiction to try the sailor and to sentence him to 16 years in state prison and to ship him secretly in violation of habeas corpus to San Quentin. On December 7th, the judge released the names of the so-called jurors in this case. And when we did a background investigation, at least one of them is Pan Gu, is not believed to be a U.S. citizen. Another one, a lesbian from Iran who was involved in our nuclear program, she was on that jury. And then a man who was a neighbor of Ryan's family, he was on that jury. And we have the list, and it's published. What's interesting is the media morons, besides Johnny Brannon, who openly libeled Steve Neri, printed twice in two articles that Steve Neri, the U.S. Navy sailor, had a gay tryst with Juan Prefray, which was a blatant lie, a blatant libel. If you know what tryst means a meeting of secret lovers. Juan Prefray went out that night and was stalking a young white boy. He admitted that prior to his death. He was at a cocaine party in the Castro. And his friends were so appalled that they came and testified against Juan Prefray, but this all was disregarded by this Kevin Ryan. A San Jose policeman had arrested Juan Prefray in a public toilet in a children's park in San Jose. Juan Prefray had openly solicited this cop by wagging his penis at him. We have pictures of this San Jose toilet in the children's park. The San Jose cop came up and gave testimony against in the preliminary hearing against Juan Prefray. Ryan dismissed that. Ryan was put on notice by Hotchkiss, who was the former public defender. Hotchkiss told him that Helen had never got permission from the Navy to prosecute Stephen Neri, nor did two governors who were both military veterans themselves. Davis, who was a U.S. Army captain in Vietnam, and Pete Wilson, who was a U.S. Marine, both had law degrees and were honest lawyers. I may disagree with them politically, but they were honest. They didn't even know about the case. And, of course, the whole thing happened on a weekend, and Washington shuts down. It was a big cover-up with the Clinton administration. And, of course, James Hormel was involved. He bought one of the judges' houses in this case. She couldn't sell it, so he bought it secretly and didn't record the sale on his public asset form, which he had to present to the federal government when he applied for an ambassadorship to Luxembourg. Also, the library in San Francisco, the Hormel Library, was not donated. He bought $250,000 in construction bonds. This was covered up. This case, as Captain Vincent Averna, another Vincent, there are three Vincents in this case. It's interesting. Kevin Vincent Ryan, Raul Vincente Almason, and Captain Vincent Averna, U.S. Navy JAG, who for 16 years donated some of his time to investigating this case and trying to get the Navy to correct the injustices that were imposed and inflicted upon Stephen Neri. And what's serious about this case is if a local prosecutor can go onto a U.S. military base and just conduct an illegal interrogation, Neri was interrogated without a lawyer being present, which is mandatory in a serious case like this. This is part of the Code of Federal Regulations. Also, he was taken off the USS Carl Vinson. The captain was not there. He was with his Porsche. He liked Porsches. Anyway, and also he was, I won't say cashiered, but he was retired early from the Navy. So he lost some money right there for his dereliction of duty. But anyway, this guy, Peter Kling, who was the first prosecutor in this case and employee of the district attorney, he forged federal documents to get Neri off this case, and we have copies of that. We got them from Hotchkiss before he fled the country. Hotchkiss went to the Philippines. I don't know why, but maybe his life was threatened. People have been threatened in this case, harassed by Wayne Friday, a so-called investigator who was actually an alleged male prostitute in New York, who fled New York and came to San Francisco and worked on Polk Street as a part-time bartender, and then somehow got into the district attorney's office as a so-called investigator. He has no academic background and no professional background, but he's politically or was politically active. So these are some of the serious issues in this case. And then to cap things off, Pifferay was connected to Art Agnos, the former disgraced mayor. The people associated with Pifferay were involved in the HUD Community Development Block Program, Block Grant Program, and they conned HUD into giving them $10 million to build a facility on South Van Ness, and we have a picture of that, called Pifferay Plaza. The critics of this project referred to it as Maori Cone Mall. And they took the name down after people started raising issues about naming a building after an anti-Semite, a National Socialist Nazi from Argentina, and a homosexual predator who preyed on young boys and young military personnel. Neri was not his first victim. There were others. Pifferay's own lawyer, who was a neighbor of Pifferay, came to the court, came from Hawaii and testified against Pifferay. He lived downstairs from Pifferay in this apartment building and relayed that Pifferay would bring young military boys to his apartment, and then there would be fights up there and believed to be S&M and all kinds of other kink that this guy was involved in. But it ain't over. Moving on to other topics, we've got a growing public controversy over the Golden Gate Bridge. Should pedestrians and bicyclists be required to pay a fee to cross the bridge? Cars pay a fee. Bicyclists, they don't want to pay anything. There is a so-called Bicycle Coalition, which is an influence peddling political organization. And they object to paying any fees. They don't want to have license plates on their bicycles. They don't want to pay liability insurance premiums. They don't want to and will not obey the rules of the road, which apply to not only two-wheeled vehicles but four, six, or more vehicles. When you put your wheels on the road, you follow the rules of the road, where no matter what state you're in or province, for that matter. And so they're opposed to this, and then their pedestrians are opposed to this. However, the Golden Gate Bridge did have minimal fees when it first opened, and there's no reason why that those people who want to use the bridge for touring or whatever shouldn't pay a minimal fee that goes for the maintenance and upkeep of the bridge and the security of that bridge. We don't even have personnel taking tolls for cars. They have automatic toll booths, and what has happened is vehicles have been stolen. When the vehicle driven by the person who stole it comes through the toll booth, a camera takes a picture of the license plate, but not who's driving the vehicle. There's a national security and a criminal element here. When a person who may be a terrorist comes through there, we have no way of identifying that person right now. Also, a murderer, a bank robber, a kidnapper, a sexual predator, any of that, there's no way to know who's driving the vehicle that comes through the toll booths on the Golden Gate Bridge. That's one of the problems. So we need to start addressing these issues. Now, another issue is you see these endorsements. It's election time and about a week or so to go. You see these endorsements. This paper, the Los Angeles Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, has endorsed this or objects to this. Well, the question thinking people should ask, who are the people at that paper, and what is their background to be making these statements? A lot of these people, and when I was started in journalism years ago, the first thing you did was you learned how to research. You did obits. You went and looked up obituaries or you looked up material for somebody who would die eventually so that the paper would have material to print their obituary. We don't have that anymore. We have people coming out of a journalism school, if you can call it that, and They give them a computer terminal, and they're instant pundit. You think you're dealing with Jack Anderson, Walter Lippmann, or the Al Sops, people like that. And they have no real experience, or as one critic of this whole the new journalism, if you can call it that, said these people never got dirt under their fingernails. They never worked real jobs. And that's an issue that people should start thinking about. Who the hell are these people to be telling us how to vote or try to influence our vote? Not only that, some of the propositions that these newspapers are against or for are placed by people who place ads in these very newspapers and on these very TV stations. So that's another, there's a conflict of interest there. Also, you hear about these polls. Stop and think. Who pays for these polls? Who writes the questions? Does anybody check the responses? Who checks? Who picks the polling people, the people to be polled, and the areas in which these people are polled? None of these questions have been addressed. We tried to get answers from the so-called field poll, and no response. The guy that started the field poll came from New Jersey. He was expelled from college for some fraud back there. His father came from Russia after the revolution and was a so-called cabinet maker. So there are a lot of questions about the origins of at least some of these polls, which are touted as fair and honest and credible. There's a question about that, you know, when you start to look at the background. Now, we're going to do a part two on Friday. We did this special today because it is this date in 1999. This Kevin Ryan was his birthday, and his kangaroo court jury gave him a birthday present, a second-degree murder conviction of Stephen Ray, in which Kevin Ryan had no authority and no credibility to preside over this case, which was a kangaroo court case, and also the very fact that Neri used an unusual federal judicial procedure called removal. A removal can be done by either the plaintiff or defendant, and there's two requirements. Either the subject matter is not they don't have jurisdiction over the subject matter. For instance, a small claims court wouldn't be handling a murder case. Or it's a federal matter, and the federal the courts have jurisdiction over the case and takes precedence over the desires of a state court, of the lower courts. So there's the issue of jurisdiction and subject matter jurisdiction, subject matter. So they had the subject matter. There was a homicide here, but it was a defense that the 18-year-old was lured. He was drugged with a date rape drug. There was all these conflicts of interest and cover-ups and intimidation of witnesses. So we will have more on Friday. Now, also, it's interesting, and not only in the Steve Neri, Juan Pifferi, Kevin Ryan case, Nick Rommel, who was gay, as I said, in his private life. He wasn't a flamer. He didn't wear a sexual preference on his sleeve. In the Matthew Shepard case, which happened about the same time, it turns out that another gay, famous writer, who's gay and he's not a flamer, he investigated the case in Wyoming for about 15, 16 years. He discovered that certainly there's a conflict there with the district attorney who prosecuted the case. Also, he discovered that Matthew Shepard was not St. Matthew, as some of the propagandists would have you believe. It turns out that Matthew Shepard had raped a boy, an 8-year-old boy. He was also involved in connected to people involved in prostitution that ran from Colorado through Wyoming, and also, even worse, methamphetamine trafficking, which is very big in those western states. Oh, boy, I don't know who this phone is, and I'm sorry about this. Anyway, we are going to end now. I'm losing my voice, and we will be back Friday at 3:30, our usual time. And we're going to play our sign-off, Politics and Poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony. Up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sign?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
flesh. Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
No, I've been.
Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll call.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Hey,
gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyushinkovic, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot, that's me.
Politics and poker, politics and poker. Play for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck.
I should say, coming up Friday, before I lose my voice, I'll be discussing a brief history of quarantine. I again suggest the movie Panic in the Streets, which dealt with a docudrama in 1950 starring Richard Widmark as a U.S. Public Health Service doctor who discovers that an illegal alien had jumped ship and was contaminated with bubonic plague. This was in New Orleans, as they say, and he had to track this guy down before he spread it. Great story, and it's very, we think, very relevant to the growing epidemic crisis we're facing today. It's not only Ebola, it's enterovirus, which is affecting our school children. It's West Nile disease. We have the flu, and we have hepatitis, we have TB, and, of course, we still have AIDS and venereal disease. Also, we'll be getting into should doctors, nurses, and other medical personnel be drug tested. We drug test airline pilots, police, fire, and even in the corporate business field, but not doctors. And there's some big scandals with those doctors, especially doctors who do workman's comp cases to lowball the claims of the injured parties. We'll get into that on Friday. So be very careful about these political ads that you get. Think, and don't be swayed by some newspaper about, you don't know who wrote it and what that person's background is. That's what I learned in politics. So be safe, and we'll see you Friday. And go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. If you're buying pizza or any other product, be very careful. We have, we're waiting for a response from this corporation where the new shadow and I saw this these workers in this major corporation's restaurant facility, not using gloves, but mixing pizza, sausage, salads, a bread dough without gloves. And with these epidemics that are going around, this is certainly questionable to say the least. And, of course, I don't know if they're going to fire these people, but you need to protect yourself. So we'll be back. And, again, ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you. Good night.